KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Lots of topics can grab the headlines during a presidential campaign. Could be an issue like Iraq or healthcare. It could be a strategic concern like the topsy-turvy primary schedule. But there's another topic that doesn't always receive headline attention, yet in the end will determine the electoral outcome. And that's our old friend, the Electoral College. Two efforts are underway now to change how California's electoral gold mine will be distributed, and how that battle turns out will have a big impact on the 2008 campaign. We'll find out who might be the winners and losers in that debate coming up next on Forum after this. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. When George Bush won the presidency in 2000, even though he lost the popular vote, it brought new attention to a venerable institution, the Electoral College. Attention, but as of yet, no change. And as we move into the heart of the 2008 election, the presidency seems likely to once again be determined not by who wins the popular vote, but by who nets the biggest treasure trove of electoral votes. Right now, all states, save two, Maine and Nebraska, apportion their votes on a winner-take-all system. California, of course, is the biggest winner-take-all prize with 55 electoral votes, more than a fifth of what you need to win the presidency. Efforts to reform the Electoral College are underway here in California and across the country, and how those efforts play out will have an impact on who gets elected president in 2008. In California, the reform efforts are twofold. The first is a proposed statewide ballot initiative that would change the winner-take-all approach in California to one where votes are apportioned by congressional district. So, if the Democratic candidate in 2008, say, wins 30 of the state's congressional districts and the Republican 25, the electoral votes would be split the same way, 30 to 25. To put that in context, if that system had been in place in 2004, George Bush would have received 22 electoral votes rather than zero, because that's how many congressional districts he carried. A counter-reform effort is now also underway, and we're going to get into that as well in just a bit. But we want to start out first with this first idea about dividing up the electoral votes by congressional district. And joining us to start us out on that first is Kevin Eckery. He's spokesperson for Californians for Equal Representation. That's the group that's pushing to divide up the electoral votes by congressional district. We'll hear from Peter Gregone, we hope, a consultant who opposes that measure, in just a moment. Kevin, first to you, why are you interested in making this change?
Well, I think that it's really kind of obvious on its face. I mean, like you said, there's been a lot of concerns about the Electoral College, and probably more deeper than that, just, you know, concerns about, you know, how do you make people's votes count? We have a situation in California where, like you say, 55 electoral votes, by far the largest in the country, and yet we have a system that really doesn't reflect California's diversity. You know, clearly things are different in the Bay Area from the Valley, from Los Angeles, et cetera. And you have a problem now of people always wanting to know, you know, does their vote really matter? And under the current system, you don't need a majority of the popular vote in order to take all of California's electoral votes. And so clearly that doesn't reflect the values or the voice of California.
You don't need a majority of the popular vote because of the possibility of a number of lesser party candidates also taking it.
In 92, for example, the California's 55 electoral votes got cast based on 45% of the vote.
Right.
So 55% of voters didn't vote for the winning candidate.
So from your standpoint, it's a more fair way to represent how Californians actually vote. Peter Regone joins us as well. He's a Democratic consultant. He opposes this effort. Peter, what's wrong with what you just heard?
Well, listen, the bottom line is that everybody agrees that we need to reform the electoral process. As someone who personally spent 6 to 8 weeks, if I can't remember exactly how much now, in Florida during the recount, I recognize the flaws, and we all recognize the flaws of the Electoral College system. The bottom line here, though, is that this isn't about reforming the Electoral College system. This is about rigging the presidential election for the Republicans. We've seen it before. These are measures that are basically out there that are trying to split up California's electoral votes, fix the elections this time around to make it virtually impossible for a Democrat to win. one of Kevin's colleagues in the Republican Party, a very prominent fellow by the name of Steve Schmidt, who's working for John McCain right now, said in the LA Times recently, if this passes, there's no way that any Democrat can win the presidency of the United States.
And that's because there isn't – you would be, I suspect, more supportive or at least less opposed to this notion if, say, Texas was doing the same thing on the other side. Is that right?
Well, that's a good point that you bring up. Actually, it's not just Texas. If you look at some of the – this week we actually filed two other initiatives that would bring California into a system called the National Popular Vote. This National Popular Vote initiative is real reform and would really take California and make California in the vanguard of fixing the Electoral College, and that what we would like to see is every state elect its president by popular vote. That's the way to go here, not just picking one state that gives rank political advantage to one political party.
Let's dig into that second idea of yours in a moment. But before we do that, I want to hear Kevin Eckery respond to your concerns about this. And Kevin, again, the concern is that if just California does this, there's an essential problem of overall fairness unless a similarly red-leaning state would agree to do the same thing and split its votes so that the Democratic candidate in a state like Texas would also get a proportional share of the votes.
Well, not to make a bad pun, but that's kind of a red herring. Blue herrings don't exist, so I can't make that kind of a pun. But, the issue is before us is California. I mean, for the same reason that Peter's colleagues, I guess, were pursuing this in North Carolina. I mean, this is an idea of doing something that's fair. I mean, it's why the Democratic Party abandoned winner-take-all primaries for apportioning delegates to the convention, 20 years ago. It's why the Republican Party doesn't use winner-take-all for its primary delegates. It's why you have existing states, Maine and Nebraska in this case, that already do it. You have other states that have looked at similar ways of doing it. And you just have the on-the-ground reality, which is that, with 55 delegates, 37 million people, and a winner-take-all system that hides the wishes of sometimes a majority of Californians. So you need something that's fairer.
Right.
That's
so, fairer. Kevin, would you then support this same idea going forward in Republican-leaning states? Would you like to see Texas, for example, do the same thing?
Well, actually, that's not in front of me. I'm worried about California. And, what Texas does is what Texas does. I'm not here to lecture other states. But I know that in the context of 37 million people in California, that you need to do something that better reflects their voices and their wishes.
Peter Ragone, why would the alternative idea that you're putting forward be any more fair? And again, to describe it, your idea, that idea, is basically that the state would be bound by whoever wins the national popular vote, but it only kicks in if enough states buy into this idea that would commit then a majority of the electoral votes to the popular election winner.
Well, first let me point out that what Kevin said when he talks about fairness, again, we all support reform. There's no question about it. We need to reform this. But you can't do it in a way that only benefits one political party and essentially ensures that the Democratic Party can't win the presidency. I mean, it's somewhat absurd on its face. That being said, we do have an alternative, and it's an alternative that makes a lot of sense. It's a movement that's started by Dr. John Koza, a professor. It uses the interstate compact system to create a national popular vote model that would allow all the electoral college votes to be awarded based on who wins the national popular vote. Again, I was in Florida. I worked for Al Gore for a year and a half or so in different capacities. He won the national popular vote. He should have been president in my mind. The system is set up in a way that doesn't reflect the national popular vote. We need to do that. Doing it just in California in a way that ensures that a Republican wins the presidency regardless of the rest of the country is quite ridiculous.
Peter Ragone represents California's For Real Electoral Reform. We're also joined by Kevin Eckery, whose group is called Californians for Equal Representation. Kevin, respond to Peter's proposal, this idea that the vote be bound to whoever wins the national the national popular vote. Why, in your judgment, is that not as good a way to go as the reform measure that your group is putting forward?
Well, I mean, two things come quickly to mind. First, the idea that somehow, votes are owned by Democrats and Republican parties is silly. I mean, voters own their votes. And the whole notion that somehow this is taking away power from one party or another is silly. I mean, this is giving power to voters, and those are the people who have it. Those are the people who are supposed to keep it. And, you know, with respect to this system that Peter's proposing, you'd have this ridiculous situation if this had been in place in 2004, where in California, where George Bush lost by, what, 11 points, 12 points, all of California's electoral votes would have been pledged to George Bush because he won the popular vote in 2004.
No, as I understand it, this proposal would have, California's votes would have still gone to Al Gore because Al Gore won the national popular vote. The national popular vote.
Al Gore didn't run in 2004.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about 2000.
No, yeah. John Kerry ran in 2004, and George Bush lost the state by almost 11 points. How in the world would it reflect the wishes of Californians? And that's what the election's about, reflecting the wishes of Californians, to put together a system that gave George Bush 55 California electoral votes when he lost the state by 11 points.
Yeah, Peter Ragone, fair point that Kevin just makes, and how that would have, in a sense, put Californians out of the picture in 2004.
Now, this isn't about putting Californians out of the picture. The bottom line is that this effort by the Republican operatives on the other side is about rigging the election to make sure that no Democrat can win in 2004. That's what really we need to be discussing here. As for having a initiative that allows the popular vote of this country to dictate who becomes president, that's the right way to go, and that's real reform. The reform that the Republicans are talking about here is really not a reform at all. It's talking about a way to ensure that Democrat can't win the presidency.
Last quick question. Sorry to interject, Peter, but a last quick question for both of you, and then we're going to move on to include two electoral experts to talk about this further. But, Peter, first to you, and then Kevin, there was a field poll that came out just recently that indicates that so far, at least, Californians think this idea of dividing up the electoral votes by way of congressional district is a good idea, that showed that a majority of Californians preferred it. Why do you think that is, Peter, given the objections that you're raising?
Well, as I said before, we all believe that the Electoral College is an antiquated system that should not be in place any longer. We all believe in real reform. Senators Feinstein, Boxer, and all the others who are part of the advisory committee we put together believe that we need real reform. Real reform, though, is not taking one state, one large state that generally leans Democratic, splitting up its votes and making sure that no Democrat can win the presidency. That is a sham. That is something that's being perpetrated so that you can ensure that you maintain power even if you don't win the popular vote around the country. That's the irony of all of this, is that you could actually be disenfranchising people.
And Kevin Eckery, I assume you must be encouraged by the field poll results.
Oh, we're really encouraged. I mean, you know, the field, you always look at field with a little bit of skepticism. I mean, ever since I remember when he announced Governor Tom Bradley had been elected back on Election Day in 82. But you had the poll showed broad support at the beginning, and then after there was some negative information given to the respondents, and they were asked their opinion then, 40-some-odd percent of Democrats still supported the initiative, and 70% of Republicans did. And that's very much a winnable situation. But getting back to Peter's other comment, I mean, you have the situation that the elections are there to support. We elect presidents by state, and the small states are never going to change the Electoral College because it was put in place to protect them. So the only alternative we have is to make the Electoral College work better. The states have the job in the Constitution of deciding how they manage their elections. This isn't a national issue. This is a California issue. And to put in place a system that would, even though George Bush lost by 11 points, put all of California's electoral votes in his column doesn't make any sense. I mean,
and we'll have to, sorry, Kevin, but we'll have to leave it there so that we can broaden out to our discussion to some of the very points that you're just starting to suggest. Kevin Eckery joins us this morning. He was with Californians for Equal Representation, and Peter Ragone of Californians for Real Electoral Reform. Thanks both very much for joining us. We're joined now by Stephen Hill, who is director of the Political Reform Program at the New America Foundation and author of 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy. Stephen Hill, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. And joining us as well from the campus of Claremont in Claremont McKenna College is Jack Pitney. He's Roy P. Crocker Professor of American Politics at Claremont McKenna College and author of The Art of Political Warfare. Professor Jack Pitney, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks both for joining us. Interesting to hear both Peter Rigone and Kevin Eckery debate the pros and cons of these various proposals, and we want to get your views on those suggestions as well. But let's go back for a moment, because Kevin Eckery was suggesting that the reason why the Electoral College exists is in part to protect small states. Jack Pitney, give us a quick bit of history 101 about why we have the Electoral College.
Well, originally the idea behind the Electoral College was that it would be a deliberative body, that within each state the electors would actually sit down and talk among themselves as to who would be the best president. Didn't actually work that way even from the start. And the structure of the Electoral College did give some extra chips to the small states, although the way the system has worked out, it's not at all clear it necessarily gives advantages to the small states, given where candidates campaign.
So in essence, was it part of the founders' dubiousness about having direct democracy?
Well, the founders believed in popular rule, but the built-in various checks and balances of which the Electoral College was one. In fact, if you read the Federalist Papers, there was an expectation that the election might frequently go to the House of Representatives, which is the procedure in place in case nobody gets a majority of the electoral vote.
Let's dig into these current efforts at reform then and get your views on these various proposals. Stephen Hill, first, on the idea that's been put forward that Kevin Eckery's group, the Californians for Equal Representation, dividing up the electoral votes by way of congressional district. You heard his argument that essentially it's a fairer way to represent California because, after all, Californians don't vote 100% for one candidate or the other, then therefore why should electoral votes be distributed in an electoral vote way like that? What's your sense of that particular effort at reform?
I don't think it's fair. I think it's hard to make the Electoral College fairer is the problem. I mean, they're trying to – if it's true that their intention is to make things fairer, they're starting from a deficit because it's just very difficult to make the Electoral College fairer. And in fact, what they're trying to do is the equivalent of gerrymandering of our legislative districts. They're taking a certain small geographic area, and they're going to try and change the rules in a way that clearly does benefit Republican candidates for president. Even if that's not their intention, as they say, that's clearly what will happen. And so I think it's important to really understand that the Electoral College itself has significant deficits in terms of it does make most of our elections non-competitive. In both the 2000 and 2004 elections, the election came down to two states, Ohio and Florida. By election day, everyone paying attention knew that those were the only two states that mattered. And as every indication in 2008, it will work the same way. So that means all the other states and all the voters in those states and the issues they care about are basically watching the presidential election from the 42nd row, if you will. This proposal does nothing to change that. And in fact, in some ways, it makes it worse. In the 2004 election, George Bush had about 51% of the popular vote. If you were to do this congressional allocation nationwide, he won about 59% of the congressional districts. And so the gap between the electoral vote and the popular vote would have been even greater in both the 2000 and the 2004 elections than what they were under the current system. So,
Jack Pitney, is it in essence not really possible to reform the Electoral College one state at a time? I mean, my question about this particular effort is that it would only really work, and Stephen Hill is suggesting even then it has problems, but it would only work in some semblance of fairness if every state did that, if a red state, a conservative Republican-leaning state like Texas, also made sure that at least some of its votes went to the Democratic candidate. So isn't that part of the problem here? You can't really do this one state at a time.
Yeah, the states have the authority to do this, but you could have some very, very strange outcomes. A whole shelf full of doctoral dissertations could be written about the various scenarios that could come out of this, with some states adopting it and some states not. And one aspect of this that hasn't gotten a lot of attention but plays into the partisan dimension is this. If Republicans back this, it could actually backfire on them because there's a fair chance the Republican nominee next year could be Rudy Giuliani, and Rudy Giuliani could conceivably carry California and all of its 55 electoral votes, but under this system, he would lose perhaps a majority of the state's electoral votes.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, in the 2004 presidential election, George W. Bush won the national popular vote by 3 million votes. But if only 60,000 voters in Ohio had changed their minds and voted for Kerry instead of Bush, Kerry would have been elected president. Only 60,000 voters changing their mind would have elected Kerry president, even though he would have lost the national popular vote by 3 million votes. So the current system isn't working well for either party, it seems to me.
One of the arguments for changing the current system is also that candidates will ignore those states that are not in play, quote unquote. And California in recent presidential election cycles has at least been not in play. It's been considered safely Democratic. The idea behind this, Stephen Hill, or the argument would be, well, this would mean that candidates would actually then come here because something would be at stake, regardless of what the overall outcome is. Does that argument make any sense to you?
In some states, that argument might make sense. In California, it doesn't, because in California, the congressional districts themselves are so non-competitive. You know, we've heard a lot in recent years in this discussion of redistricting reform about how non-competitive California's congressional districts are. 53 House seats, 51 or 52 of them are won by huge landslide margins. And so it's not likely to make any difference, really. In other words, the candidates coming here and campaigning more is not going to change the outcome in any of these congressional districts, in most likely scenario. I mean, just another example, in a state like Michigan, where John Kerry won the statewide popular vote, he won only 5 of 15 of the congressional districts. So instead of winning 100% of the electoral vote in Michigan, he would have won about a third of it. And again, the candidates going and campaigning in Michigan, where the districts are massively non-competitive, most of them won by huge landslide margins, is not likely to change that.
So what do we best do? I'd like to, before we go to our break here, get a best sense from each of you. Is it to do away with the Electoral College? Is it to change the system in a more radical way? Jack Pitney, first to you, what is your thought about what ought bring about a better system for political reform?
I'd be skeptical about any change in the Electoral College until we have a thorough reform of the vote counting procedures in the states. The trouble, if we went to a national popular vote, is that we could end up having Floridas in every state. So until the states have reliable vote counting systems, you would have a big problem with a national popular vote. So I would make that the first step, and then we could look at the possibility of a national popular vote.
I think the national popular vote is clearly the way to go, and sometimes with reform, you can look at the particular form and think, what's wrong with it? And the only thing you know is that it's better than what you do now. As Winston Churchill once said, democracy is the worst form of government, except all the others that have been tried. And I think you could probably say maybe the national popular vote, while it might have some things that we have to think through, is clearly better than what we're doing now. And just to comment on what Jack said, we wouldn't have Floridas in every state, in fact, because it would be a national popular vote. The winner wouldn't be contingent on who won each particular state's popular vote. That wouldn't be how it would work at all. It would simply be a national popular vote, and it also would make our elections less susceptible to fraud, which is a big concern right now.
We'll pick up with more of our discussion, what to do about the Electoral College, how to bring about more fairness into how our presidential electoral system works when we return. And we welcome your calls and emails on this topic. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us your questions at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, what to do about the Electoral College, if anything, looking at a couple of reform measures being put forward here in California. We're joined by Stephen Hill, who is director of the Political Reform Program at the New America Foundation and author of 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy, and Jack Pitney, Roy P. Crocker Professor of American Politics at Claremont McKenna College in Claremont, California, and author of The Art of Political Warfare. We should also note that all of these efforts often come, Stephen Hill, with a little bit of partisan connection. Peter Ragon was being critical of the effort being put forward to divide by congressional district because it would favor a Republican. We should also note the Democrats tried to do exactly the same thing in 2004 in the state of Colorado. So there's always a little bit of partisan, if not a little, a lot of partisan push behind these various reform efforts.
Absolutely. In fact, the Democrats just tried to do it in North Carolina. I believe they've given up that attempt, but it shows how tempting it is. And it's also, it's instructive for Republicans who are trying to do this in California to realize that be careful what you ask for, because in fact, there are 23 initiative states, and in 18 of those states are states that George W. Bush won in both the 2000 and 2004 elections. And those two of those states are Ohio and Florida, and those states combined have more electoral votes than California does. So if this becomes a trend, like gerrymandering legislative districts is a trend and, you know, a power grab that both parties engage in. If the Democrats start going after this in those 18 states with initiatives, Republicans may find that they've opened a Pandora's box that completely backfires on them.
Which in the end is why your argument is the best way to go would be to just bind the results to the popular vote.
I think so. It's really the lesser of two or three evils at this point. It's just we've reached a point where having a presidential election that boils down to two states, Ohio and Florida, and not even all the voters in Ohio and Florida, because then each side gets out their polls and focus groups and they figure out, okay, which group of voters are going to vote for me? I don't have to talk to them. And which group of voters will never vote for me? I don't need to address them. It's just this group of swing voters in Ohio and Florida, a small handful of slice of voters that is determining a national election. That is ridiculous.
And Jack Pitney, if the voter fraud concerns that you raised right before the break could be taken care of, would you then be supportive of having the presidential decision based on the popular vote?
I think it would be a closer call. The trouble is right now, if we had a very close election, not necessarily fraud, it's just the question of recounts and contests in just about every state. We all saw what happened in Florida, but that would have been replicated in states all over the country, including and especially California. If we could have a very reliable vote counting system, again, a closer call, but even there, you would have candidates campaigning in certain areas of the country, neglecting others, so you'd have a reallocation. But it's not that every section of the country would get equal attention.
So for you, in the end, is it much as it was for the founders, this idea that you need some sort of safety net that provides a final bit of deliberation and finality?
Well, again, the Electoral College isn't a deliberative body anymore. It's just in devising electoral systems, we have to take into account what presidential candidates are going to do, where they're going to travel, and also the vulnerabilities of the current system. And I think, again, the key point here, unless and until we fix this system, the danger of a direct popular vote is to what we saw in Mexico recently is very real.
Yeah, yeah. All right, to our calls this morning. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. And again, you can email us as well at forum@kqed.org. First to Philip, who joins us this morning in Healdsburg. Philip, you're on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Am I clear enough?
You are.
Okay. A couple of comments, if I might, because I understand Kevin left. I had a question for him. One, I don't think that any state should be in a position to dictate to the rest of the country who's going to be president. And in essence, this bill would do that. That is, if everything left the same, California would decide who the president was by tipping the balance into, you know, perpetuity or until the rules change. If we're going to change things that affect a federal election, it should be done by, in this case, I guess, a constitutional amendment, so that it changes across the board, so it's fair across the board. I'm blind, and the Help America Vote Act was passed that affected all states, and it was passed at federal level without a constitutional amendment. I'm not sure that was okay, and it's made things worse, not better.
Hmm.
I got one more comment, and then I'll get off the phone.
Okay,
and
briefly,
that is,
Philip,
I'm in a county where we have paper ballots. And so I asked our registrar of voters 2 years ago, we have paper ballots, and you scan them with an optical scanner, correct? In the case of that California needed a recount, or this county needed a recount, in time for the Electoral College, could you do that? And she said, even though we have hand-counted paper ballots, we have no mechanism in place to recount them, we would be hard-pressed to do that. We definitely need to reform our election process.
Philip, thanks for the call and the observations. Jack Pinney, does that square some with what you're saying, that there are those sorts of problems still?
Yeah, and that would be a problem with either the Electoral College or the proposed interstate compact.
And Stephen Hill, on Philip's other point, that part of the problem with the California measure, if California were the only big state that were to divide up its electoral votes going away from winner-take-all to a, say, 30-25 split, that in a de facto sense, that guarantees the candidate on the Republican side in this instance support that would swing the election.
Certainly, you know, when you're doing it on a piecemeal basis like this, and it's being done by one partisan side or the other, and it has all the implications of partisan advantage, then it really creates these sorts of problems. And I think that is inherently is part of the problem. But maybe just one quick comment on recounts and what have you. I actually think that a national popular vote would make it recounts less likely. If you think about just our recent presidential history, in 2000, where the election was decided by 537 vote difference in Florida, that's when you have to have a recount. But the nationwide, it was decided by over 500,000 votes. So there, the outcome was much clearer on a nationwide basis than it was in the state of Florida. Same happened in Ohio, where the vote difference was much smaller than it was on a nationwide basis. So I think it actually would make recounts less likely. And other countries that use a direct election for president, like France, where you have tens of millions of voters counting nationwide, they've not had problems with requiring recounts. It's just statistically, it's less likely that you'll need a recount when the pool of voters that matters, 110, 120 million voters, is much greater than, you know, 537 voters in Florida.
Yeah, really interesting observation. Joe joins us next on the Sirius Satellite Network from Idaho this morning, a smaller state with some concerns probably about what the role of the Electoral College would be. Joe, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, first off, just leave it alone. You guys are not as smart as the framers. That's number one. Number two is I take great exception to the notion of just going to the popular vote, because then you'd have New York, L.A., Baltimore, Chicago's, and all those cities determining who our president is. And the way it's set up now, we actually, out here in these little states and little towns, have a voice. We see it here in the Northwest all the time, Washington and Oregon, for example. Most of the state's a rural area, yet towns like Seattle and Portland pretty much dictate the political climate of the state.
Joe, thank you. Yeah, no, we get your point, and it's an important one. Jack Pinney, respond to that concern, because it is that people in smaller states say, listen, it guarantees our importance.
Yeah, and that's one of the arguments for retaining the Electoral College, the existence of federalism. And, of course, federalism creates problems as well with the vote count. The gentleman earlier talked about the problems in implementing the Help America Vote Act. Even though it's a federal law, it's implemented at the state and local level. And that's one of the big barriers to reforming the vote counting system.
Some of our emails coming in. There are 499,000 persons per elector in Nevada and 663,000 persons per elector in California. That shows that the Electoral College is fundamentally unfair, as it gives a disproportionate number of electors to smaller, and in this case, a more conservative state. That's the other side of the argument, right, Stephen Hill, that Joe was making, leave it alone, we want attention here in Idaho. The other side of it is perhaps those states get too much attention?
Well, actually, I mean, the figures you just cited, it's more skewed than even that. I mean, if you're a voter in Wyoming, you have 18 times more electoral power, so to speak, than a voter in California. And so it is quite skewed in that way. But I think that the idea that somehow a national popular vote will just boil down to the cities is, I don't think, is correct at all. In fact, just think about here in California, where we have a Republican governor. You know, Governor Schwarzenegger didn't just go to cities to campaign. In fact, he didn't win by especially in the first election, by winning Los Angeles and San Francisco and cities like that. He had to go to the rural areas. I mean, in a national popular vote, as a candidate, you'll go to wherever your voters are. That's the beauty of it, is that every voter's vote will count. It won't matter where you live. Whereas now, with the system that we have now, it really does matter in a dramatic fashion where you live, whether your vote counts or not. And so that's where I think that's a misconception about the national popular vote plan.
More ideas on what we could do to make American democracy work better. Carol has another one joining us from San Jose. Carol, you're on.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I have 2 points. I'm very interested in the Electoral College being eliminated personally. I realize it's fraught with problems, but I have 2 other points which I think are really important. One is that we should have a national primary day. It's ridiculous for a couple of states, no matter who they are, to choose and have the power and to eliminate candidates. We all know over the history of candidates being eliminated by states like New Hampshire and Iowa. They never even got to the rest of us. They gave up. So that's basically unfair to begin with. The second, and so I would like to recommend a national primary day movement. The second thing is the root cause of most political corruption is the cost of TV ads, TV campaign ads. The television airwaves, the radio airwaves, technically belong to the citizens of the United States. And in all other industrialized countries, if you can prove you're a legitimate candidate with a following, you get free airtime on television and radio. Any candidate that gets in today has to begin the day they get elected raising money that moment for the rest of their elections, because they know that they are going to have to pay for those ads.
Carol, thank you. Thanks for the observations. Don't want to take us too far off our overall point on reforming the Electoral College, but Carol raises some interesting questions. And I guess, Jack Pitney, the question I would take away from Carol's points to you would be, would changing the electoral system, going to a more popular-based endeavor, would that have an impact on money and politics? In other words, if we bound our elections to the popular vote, would that change the role of money in politics?
Well, money has always been an important part of politics. It would change how candidates allocate the money, but it wouldn't eliminate the importance of money. And the point that Carol raised was these are very valid concerns, but they're 2 things in tension, because if we had a national primary system, that would make the nomination process open only to a very small number of candidates. It would be very difficult if you offered free television time to every candidate who wanted to run for president to make that feasible.
Some of our other emails coming in. Margie writes, doesn't this proposal shift the problem of the Electoral College down to the congressional district? The congressional district wouldn't send proportional votes to the Electoral College, so it would still be winner-take-all from each of those districts. To get popular vote to rule, eliminate the Electoral College. That's what gets my vote. Randall writes in, Mr. Eckery's position seems disingenuous. For California to split their electoral votes while the rest of the country does not do this would do nothing but split California's votes and effectively take California out of the picture. And we have this also from Danny. I wouldn't vote for the proposition because electoral votes would be apportioned by congressional districts, which are gerrymandered to eliminate as much competition as possible. I guess, Jack Pitney, in some ways, that's also a problem. If you went to this congressional district idea, wouldn't it add to the temptation for that much more gerrymandering to go on?
That's right. And you'd get potential presidential candidates getting involved in a way they do now. And that... You know, the thing is, the bottom line is, you can make a principled case for the Electoral College as it is. You can make a principled case for a national popular vote. It's a lot more difficult to make a really principled case for adopting the district plan.
I tend to agree with Jack, but the thing I will say that I think that Kevin Eckery has put his finger on is that, and this is what is, I think, gives them some legs with their proposal, is that there seems to be this presumption that California is somehow owned by the Democrats, that those electoral votes belong to the Democrats, just as Texas's electoral votes belong to the Republicans, or Illinois and New York belongs to the Democrats, and that any attempt to try and stir this up is somehow playing with the fragile rules, the war the rules of war, of political war that we have all sort of agreed on here. And that's where I think what we have to really understand is that it's the rules themselves at this point that are just hopelessly broken. And so I think that I to that extent, I applaud Kevin Eckery and his group's efforts to try and make us really think about these things, that really no one should own California's electoral votes. It really should be the voters that decide that, not the fact that voters live in a particular state where it's a done deal, it's a locked up state where their electoral college votes go. And so part of what we have to figure out is, how do we make voters feel like their vote for president, which is actually, after all, our most powerful, highest elective office, how do we make them feel like their vote counts again? And that's really where we have to start putting our efforts.
Stephen Hill, director of the Political Reform Program at the New America Foundation. He joins us along with Jack Pitney from Claremont McKenna College, and you join us as well, and we welcome your participation. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Back to more of our calls. Art in San Francisco, you're next.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Basically, I have two questions or comments. One is basically, first of all, is it democratic to some extent that we have about 12% of our population, 35 million people, who are immigrants, but yet not citizens and they cannot vote? And secondly, it seems to me that there is some sentiment amongst white Americans, I might call them, I don't know, indigenous, those who have been here quite a while, for some generations, those who want to keep Electoral College, because if we eliminate it, then the power will go to Los Angeles area, San Francisco area, New York, Chicago, basically big metropolitan areas with lots of population and lots of immigrant population. And those immigrants can vote in the ways that maybe indigenous people won't like it.
Huh. Interesting observation, Art. Thank you for that. Jack Pitney, your response. Do you think there is some merit to Art's idea that maybe the resistance to a popular vote is based on ethnic concerns?
Well, it's based on political concerns. I mean, a lot of positions on this, as you mentioned earlier, reflect partisanship, and not just political parties, but interest groups take various positions on the issue, depending on whether they would see an advantage or not. To take one example of a group that would very much favor retention of the Electoral College for, you know, self-interested partisan purposes would be Cubans in the state of Florida. Relatively small percentage of the population in one state, but extremely pivotal in the Electoral College and therefore having a great deal of influence over U.S. policy toward Cuba.
And more of our calls. Matthew is up next. Matthew, you're on.
Have you got me?
You're on.
All right. The Electoral College is like a 218-year-old car in which all the parts are broken. And the Republican fellow earlier was essentially proposing that you change the clutch. Now, if you change the clutch on that car, the car is still not going to run, and it's still going to be hopelessly broken. The Electoral College was devised in a time of slavery, when the French Revolution was falling apart and the founders were scared to death of what excessive democracy would do. And the country has clearly moved beyond that era.
Matthew, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And the analogy. Jack Pitney, your response, as I think our one person who thinks that there's some value to holding on to the Electoral College.
Well, just because it dates back to the founding doesn't mean we should reject it. The Bill of Rights dates back to the founding era, too, and I don't think anybody's proposing to do away with that.
But Stephen Hill, Matthew's other point, that is just fixing one part, the body of the car and the rest of the engine is still broken, would you concur with that?
Well, by way of answering, let me give you some figures for people to think about. In the 2004 presidential election, 66% of all the money spent in the presidential campaigns, we're talking about a lot of money, so 66% of that money was spent in only five states. And I can guarantee you those states were not Wyoming, Idaho, North Dakota, South Dakota, the small states that supposedly are advantaged by this method that we're doing using right now. During the last month of the campaign, more money was spent on advertising in Florida than 46 states combined. So forget what the textbooks, the political science textbooks, say about the Electoral College or what the founders or framers might have intended, though I think if we could actually have an interesting discussion about that. I mean, the founders were actually quite confused. If you go back and read the annals of the Constitutional Convention, they were confused about what's the best way to elect the president, and they kind of hit upon the method we have now at the last minute because basically they were out of time. They were actually kind of desperate in trying to figure out. So the idea that somehow this is the product of the brilliance of the founders and framers is a myth. And so, you know, the way it works today in 2007 and will work in the 2008 presidential election, I don't see how our country is being served by it. I don't see how average voters are being served by it. And I don't see how the small states are being served by it.
We've spent a lot of our hour talking about the first proposal, the one that's has been discussed the most, which was this idea of breaking up the winner-take-all and dividing it up by congressional district instead. We haven't talked as much about the other reform effort, which would be to say that California's electoral votes would be pledged to whoever wins the popular vote nationally, but only kicks in, Stephen Hill, when enough other states go along with that to make sure that the end result will be one that ensures that the next president is the one who wins the popular vote. In essence, this is a kind of end around, right, the Electoral College. In essence, it's a de facto constitutional amendment.
Yes, you certainly could describe it that way, because typically to just simply abolish the Electoral College by a constitutional amendment, you need support of two-thirds of both houses of Congress and three-fourths of the state legislatures. And it wouldn't take many states to basically torpedo a constitutional amendment. But what the National Popular Vote Plan does is it utilizes the ability of states to sign treaties, compacts with each other, binding each other together. And we do that in interstate commerce and lots of other ways. And when enough states that have together as an aggregate a majority of electoral votes together sign on to this, then at that point it goes into effect and our presidential election will become a de facto national popular vote. It's an end around. I suppose you could describe it that way, but it's also just it's keeping within the laws that we have to I think create a method that is going to serve Americans better as we elect our president. It means that you as a voter, no matter where you live, your vote will count towards something, towards electing your president. Whereas right now, as I said, most voters are viewing the presidential election from the 42nd row.
Mike wants to join in with a question about the role of states and borders as well. Mike, go on.
Hi, Michael. Can you hear me?
You're on, yes.
So, you know, one comment that I wanted to make is, for me, the most compelling argument for the national popular vote is in that red state, blue state, battleground state, swing state become completely obsolete terms. Because in reality, why should state borders play any role in a national level election? I feel that as a Californian, my vote does not count. The gentleman from Idaho feels like he has a voice, but obviously folks from small states don't get any attention from the candidates. No money is spent there. No candidates visit those small states, nor do they visit any state that where the outcome is known far in advance. So for me, that's one of the most compelling reasons is simply that it makes where you live to be irrelevant. That's the biggest advantage to that measure.
Mike, thank you. Jack Pitney, on that point, in a national election, state borders really should be irrelevant.
Well, the part of the argument for the Electoral College is that it's a federal system. And that's also one of the problems with the scheme that we're talking about, and that it's an interstate compact, but interstate compacts require the approval of Congress. I know there's some who argue that for some reason this might not, but the Constitution, I think, is pretty clear on this point, especially in a case where a compact would change the balance of power between the states and the federal government, and that would certainly be the case here.
Phil joins us next in Burlingame. Phil, go ahead.
Hi. I think the idea of splitting up the electoral is nothing more than a Republican ploy, and that's why your guest wouldn't respond positively on the Texas thing. But let's turn to the Electoral College. I want to really correct something. There are two parts to the Electoral College. The first one is the apportion the voting for the president by the states. And originally, the state legislators voted for who the president would be. And the idea here runs fundamental to the Federalist Papers and Madison and the setting up of the Constitution, that the states vote for who the president is, and it's a states' rights issue. And that the idea of a popular election that crosses state boundaries is, I think, personally, fundamentally contrary to the states' rights and the way things are set up. The second part of it is, you know, the idea that people get into a room with the Electoral College is kind of ridiculous. But the idea of apportioning votes on the basis of states, I think, is fundamental. And who cares if the popular vote goes different?
Phil, thank you. Thanks for the observation. One last email I'd like to read. David writes, I'd be interested to know why your first two guests, Kevin Eckery and Peter Ragone, don't just join forces on a campaign to abolish the Electoral College. They both claim to be working to create true elections, but each are working in a way that would work to their own party's political advantage. And I guess in the end, that's what this needs to come back to, Stephen Hill and then Jack Pitney. We need to see our way through this because obviously there's always an agenda behind these various efforts. So what would be your best advice, Stephen Hill, as we confront this thicket of proposals that always have some sort of hidden partisan purpose as to how people should put their own thoughts forward so that our elections are done in a more fair way?
I think people should ask themselves, does my vote count? And do I feel like my vote counts? Do I feel like stepping into that voter's booth is an act of meaning, or is it almost a waste of time? And I think increasingly voters are showing with the low voter turnout that we have, both local, state, and federal levels, that more voters are feeling like it's a waste of time.
So you think the popular vote, binding the election to the popular vote, would potentially increase voter participation?
I do. I think that you would see, instead of the candidates as they do now, as I cited the figures earlier, just going to a handful of states in order to mobilize their supporters, they would have to go more parts of the country and they would have to mobilize more voters. And there's lots of political science literature showing that one of the most fundamental factors in whether voters turn out or not is whether the candidates come to them and really make an appeal for them to turn out and vote and whether they feel like their vote counts because it's a competitive election.
And Jack Pitney, a quick response to that. And if you want, a quick last word of defense for the Electoral College.
Well, I guess the basic question, and it's open, and it's very much an open one: which system works best? Which system, given the federal nature of the United States regime, would produce the results that most people are going to see as legitimate? And there are many considerations that people have to take into account. The first one, obviously, is popular will. Also, have to take into account simply the mechanics of elections. And the value of federalism itself, and those are the major considerations that people have to come into play.
And we'll leave our conversation there. Jack Pitney, the Roy P. Crocker Professor of American Politics at Claremont McKenna College. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And joining us as well, Stephen Hill, Director of the Political Reform Program at the New America Foundation. Stephen Hill, thank you.
My pleasure.
Forum is produced by Robin Giannatasio-Mall and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer is Danny Bringer. And the executive producer of Forum is Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.